Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Today we're up to Book 14, Chapter 18. This campaign consisted in a flight of the French during which they did all they could to destroy themselves. From the time they turned onto the Kaluga Road to the day that their leader fled from the army, none of the movements of the crowd had any sense. So one might have thought that of this period of the campaign, the historians who attribute the actions of the mass to the will of one man would have found it impossible to make the story of the retreat fit their theory. But no. Mountains of books have been written by the historians about this campaign, and everywhere Napoleon's arrangements are described, the manoeuvres and his profound plans which guided the army, as well as the military genius shown by his marshals. The retreat from Malo-Yaroslavets, when he had a free road into a well-supplied district, and the parallel road was open to him along which Kutuzov afterwards pursued him, this unnecessary retreat along a devastated road is explained to us as being due to profound considerations. Similarly, profound considerations are given for his retreat from Smolensk to Orsha. Then his heroism at Krasnoye is described, where he is reported to have been prepared to accept battle and take personal command, and to have walked about with a birch stick and said, "J'ai assez fait l'empereur, il est temps de faire le général," which means, "I have acted as emperor long enough, it is time to act as general." But nevertheless, immediately ran away again, abandoning to its fate the scattered fragments of the army he left behind. Then, when we are told of the greatness of soul of the marshals, especially of Ney, a greatness of soul consisting in this, that he made his way by night round through the forest and across the Dnieper, and escaped Orsha, abandoning standards, artillery, and 9/10 of his men. And lastly, the final departure of the great emperor from his heroic army is presented to us by the historians as something great and characteristic of genius. Even that final running away, described in ordinary language as the lowest depth of baseness which every child is taught to be ashamed of, even that act finds justification in the historian's language. When it is impossible to stretch the very elastic threads of historical ratiocination any further, when actions are clearly contrary to all that humanity calls right or even just, the historians produce a saving conception of greatness. Greatness, it seems, excludes the standards of right and wrong. For the great man, nothing is wrong. There is no atrocity for which a great man can be blamed. C'est grand, say the historians. It is great. And there no longer exists either good or evil, but only grand and not grand. Grand is good, not grand is bad. Grand is the characteristic in their conception of some special animal called a hero. The Napoleon, and Napoleon escaping home in a warm fur coat and leaving to perish those who were not merely his comrades but were, in his opinion, men he had brought there, feels que c'est grand. That is great. And his soul is tranquil. Du sublime. He saw something sublime in himself. Or ridicule, il n'y a qu'un pas, which means from the sublime to the ridiculous, there is but one step. Said he, and the whole world for 50 years has been repeating sublime, grand, Napoleon the grand, the sublime, du sublime, or ridicule, il n'y a qu'un pas. And it occurs to no one to admit that a greatness not commensurable with the standard of right and wrong is merely to admit one's own nothingness and immeasurable meanness. For us, with the standard of good and evil given to us by Christ, no human actions are incommensurable, and there is no greatness that where simplicity, goodness, and truth are absent. All right, there we go, another chapter down. tell us what you really think, Tolstoy. Is that a uniquely Australian saying, tell us what you really think? Or is that a cosmopolitan saying, tell us what you really think? Leo is really just not holding anything back, is he? He despises Napoleon. He despises the way the historians portrayed Napoleon in the aftermath or in the years that followed Napoleon's Russian invasion. How was that one sentence? Where was it? And lastly, the final departure of the great emperor from his heroic army is presented to us by the historians as something great and characteristic of genius. Even that final running away described in ordinary language as the lowest depth of baseness which every child is taught to be ashamed of, even that act finds justification in the historian's language. The lowest depth of baseness which every child is taught to be ashamed of. That's what he thinks of Napoleon and his fleeing, not fleeing from Russia, but fleeing ahead of his own army without regard for their safe departure from Russia. Cobby X said, Tolstoy seems to have lost his mind for a chapter and just wants to unload on historians. It comes off very strangely, almost like it was written by someone else. Maybe he was really drunk. Charay said, or his wife, who copied the books 6 times by handwriting, added something. Is that true, that this book was copied 6 times in handwriting? I did not know that. I'd love to hear more about that, Charay, if you could tell us more. Caucus Tree said, right. He sounds as though he would defend the honour of Russian soldiers and commanders from any undue criticism. There are a lot of optimal aspects to leaving. The retreating columns were There were a lot of optimal aspects to leaving the retreating columns unmolested. Not sure what Caucus Tree is saying there, but I think, are you defending Napoleon for the way that he fled? I'm not sure. Anyway, one thing that is very clear is Tolstoy does not like the way Napoleon left Russia. Turtle Vader says, is Tolstoy right to assert that greatness can only be achieved through simplicity, goodness, and truth? Well, they are the mark of a great person. They are the mark of a good person, though, too, really, aren't they? Simplicity, goodness, and truth. That's Tolstoy's definition of greatness, though, and it, in this chapter, he's really trying to stress how much it differs from the historian's definition of greatness, where if you do something momentous, that is considered great. Not necessarily good, but significant. Well, I suppose if you go back to the etymology of the word great, it does mean big, not necessarily good. It can also mean just large, or significant or momentous. Something, what's the word? Monumental? He certainly did big things, great in that regard, but whether or not they were good, well, maybe Napoleon wasn't so good. I read a statistic that there are more books written about Napoleon than any other person to ever have existed. So, does that mean he's good or great, or how do you define him? Definitely significant. Now, hey, I'm pretty pleased. I had some good news today, by the way, actually. Speaking of being pleased, I won't say who. I don't want to jump the gun or anything like that. But a audiobook production place, I won't say their name, have put me on file as voice talent. So I might be reading some audio books, which could be kind of cool, as an actual paid gig. I assume they pay. I'm sure they would. I mean, I'd have to be sent an audition, and I would have to audition for it. But They've shortlisted me on their talent database. How cool is that? What an exciting prospect. I'd love to do that. And on a slightly related note, speaking of audiobooks, we also have a new sponsor, our first sponsor for the podcast. And I think this is probably the best sponsor, the most appropriate one for this podcast. First of all, you're into literature. Secondly, you definitely spend a lot of time listening, as do I. I love good podcast, and I also love a good audiobook, which is why our new sponsor is Audible. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. And Audible are offering us, warriors and peacekeepers, a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. If you go to audibletrial.com/ander, audibletrial.com/ander, you can browse their unmatched selection of audio programs and download a free title and start listening. Pretty easy to do. Now, this is a audible.com service. So, Australian listeners, unfortunately, this offer isn't available. But for everyone else, audibletrial.com/ander. So, that's pretty cool. With your trial membership, 30-day trial membership, you can choose any book on Audible and start listening today for free. That's pretty great. You could jump on and get some more Tolstoy. You could just hear someone else read War and Peace. If you're getting sick of my voice, you could find another reading of War and Peace. Or my personal recommendation is the genre of War and Peace is epic. And the other really great epic genre book that I read was It by Stephen King. Often people think that would be a horror book, but actually, if you grab a copy of that off the bookshelf and look on the spine where it says the genre, you'll see the word epic. And the great thing about that is a really nice long book. That's good value for money, isn't it? That's the best way to take advantage of this free book. Get something really nice and long. Get some good listening hours in there. That's my tip. And also, it was one of the best books I've ever read. Stephen King's It. Now, I'm just going to do some quick maths for you. 1 hour on the elliptical machine is 800 calories. And this book goes for, I think it's about 60 hours. So, if you listen to Stephen King's It on the elliptical machine, I'm not suggesting that you need to work out, but I love to listen to an audiobook or a podcast or something like that while I work out. You listen to Stephen King's It, you'll burn 48,000 calories. And you'll also go on an awesome adventure. There's my suggestion for you, audibletrial.com. Wait, just let me check I said that right. audibletrial.com/ander. All right, that's going to do us for today. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.